streaming online at weft.org.
This hour of programming is supported by the listeners of WEFT and by the Champaign Center Partnership, who foster a vibrant, inviting, and active core downtown, midtown, and campus town by strengthening businesses and building community. CCP's vision is to create healthy and vibrant micro-urban areas for residents and visitors through marketing, advocacy, and special events. CCP encourages and educates the public to shop locally throughout the year. Local businesses need your help more than ever. When you spend $100 at a locally owned business, $68 out of that $100 stays right here in our community. For more information about the Champaign Center Partnership, visit them on their website at champaigncenter.com, or you can give them a call at 217-352-2400.
This is Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial. And it's been a busy week, often involving the Department of Natural Resources. So I sort of remind you of the structure. Natural resources includes nature, but it also includes resources like mining resources. And a good example is at Starved Rock State Park, which is a very popular park on the Illinois River and near to Route 80, and in the future it may be near to a railroad line coming through from Peoria to Chicago, it is hoped. The area is rich in a type of sand that is very pure and good for glass making, but other things too. So right on that spot, you have the conflict between the mining and nature. Department of Natural Resources hasn't always had a lot of money. Over the last 20 years or more, it has been very easy to take money from the Department of Natural Resources and leave it rather starved. That means it ends up not having a great deal of teeth or power to do things. But it tries and does very well at that. This week there was a Nature Preserves Commission meeting, and that is a subunit of the Department of Natural Resources. And of that group, there's a subunit, which is the Illinois Nature Preserves Inventory. So the Department of Natural Resources gives some summary of what they're doing, and other units within it, like endangered species, will have something to say. And as the director of the program, the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission will summarize. Following that, various agents within the state will make presentations of natural areas which they would like to see adjudicated for dedication. There are about six of those regions. Each region has an employee that spends their time looking at natural areas, convincing people to to do preservation work with their natural areas and sorting out dedications and soil and water conservation easements, where people who own interesting and biodiverse places will have the right to continue to live there or visit, and that designation will be okay. After that, the Department of Natural Resources deals with problems that might arise. There were a couple. One was the development of a natural area in a karst topography, which karst topography has a penchant to have limestone, which is eroded and can create caves that cave in every once in a while. So lots of questions. Well, knowing that sort of structure of the Department of Natural Resources with a yin and yang style administration, mining and natural areas and other resources too, we'll go back into some of the things that have concerned us in the last few weeks. This is continuing sort of to try and let you know what is expected of people who are generous enough to look after natural areas. One of the natural areas we've been discussing at great length and with the Sierra Club and others is, and Clark Bullard and the Vermilion County Conservation District administrators, Laura especially, and a group of bicycle people. The scenario is this. The area on the Middle Fork of the Vermilion was owned by farmers. It was decided by the state that they would like to put a dam in there, and so they resumed a whole bunch of farmland. So then they owned areas that sometimes they also sold to Illinois Power to put in a power plant. But they also own a canyon, which is rather unique. And people have been asking questions about it because we may have a little prairie, but we also have a little forest. These were areas where Native American people would protect themselves during winter, but roam out in the prairie during the summer months and come back. There's about, I think, 4,000 acres there. It's not a lot of ground, but the bikers, mountain bicycles, have asked for permission to put in trails, and the Department of Natural Resources has allowed that. And it's a controversy because to fit 20 miles of trail, which is sort of a standard thing if you want to invite national level trail people in, you need a certain length of trail. In order to do that, you have to have hairpin bends and you have to go up and down the valleys where there erosion occurs. And it's glacial till, so it erodes very easily. And if you're a naturalist, you go around the ridge rather than up and down the ridge. It's the same for farmers. If they're on a hill, they it's always better to contour plow than to go up and down the hill where erosion takes soil down to the Mississippi and the Gulf, along with the chemicals that are in it, the pesticides and excess fertilizer. So people have been looking at this natural area and hoping it will be preserved. They appreciate what the bicycle people are doing, but it's a little much. And one of the problems is that the Department of Natural Resources has not had the money and the opportunity to involve people in public meetings. So the nature people feel that they have been left out, which is true. There's a lot of local involvement. There's a background of farmers that lost their territory and are watching what is reused. There are local people who started off as mining people who then lost out to strip mining and have other occupations. There have been automobile factories and the like. So Danville doesn't have a lot of money. It has a lot of people with a lot of innovation. I have good libraries and art centers, and there's character over there. It's very near to Indiana, so it relates to Indiana too. The bicycles, if they get underway, will encourage people to come visit. That means more restaurant use and more entry fees. And so there's a little bit of money involved, as well as exercise and competition. And this week I talked to people who are knowledgeable about the area, and it seems like the Department of Natural Resources has allowed the bicycle people to continue to put in trails volunteer style without a lot of conversation with the nature people. The only resource open, perhaps, is Freedom of Information Act, which asks the Department of Natural Resources what they have been doing and how they communicate with the trail people. And what they have is a responsibility to the nature and to request meetings. So it would seem at the moment that the bicycle people have a right to continue their work. And but on the other hand, there's a feeling that there's an opportunity for questions. Not unrelated is Kickapoo Trail. It comes through from Urbana to Vermilion County, and it stops for the moment at the Kickapoo State Park, which involves quite a lot of strip mining that's rejuvenated. And there was a question as to could the bicycles use the strip mine areas rather than a pristine natural area. It's on the trails are on the upper edge of a canyon, but there's also a temptation to go down into the canyon, which is unique for Vermilion County. Once the rail trail gets into action, there will probably be many more people using the Kickapoo State Park. Interestingly, on Zoom this week, there was a friends of the Kickapoo Trail sorting itself out. It's a new organization trying to establish what it wants to do and to work with committees and executive boards and perhaps even a CEO if it gets underway. I got the impression that the Friends is more oriented to recreation than it is to preservation, which saddens me some, because this railroad bed is 100 foot wide with a retired ballast in the middle, but relatively pristine soil and prairie or habitat vegetation on either side. I made a comment that 10 miles between Ogden and Oakwood was a prime case for preserving some of the dignity of our prairie, which is almost in an endangered ecosystem. It goes back 10,000 years to when glaciers retreated and left room for plants to come in from refugia. And those refugia exist still on railroad beds, whether they're active or abandoned. The people who watch railroads were getting rather disturbed. There was a Steiger's Act which allowed railroads to abandon, and the Congress at the federal level was getting worried about losing too many railroad beds for possible future use. They have always been adapted to a main line, so that if you bring materials and equipment into Los Angeles from China or other places, then they can be put on rail that will be go to Chicago or to New York or Atlanta. So the main lines are well established and they keep getting improved, but the short lines, not so much. But there also were short lines like from Abana to Danville that were connections. There were more than just grain lines. And Conrail was about to close out. So a number of buyers, bikers, hikers, and biologists were buying these corridors for recreation and preservation. And the railroad people observed that and decided that it was better for them to save rail beds by doing what they call interim trail use, to get to use bicycle and hikers and biology people to occupy the railroad bed with the proviso that they could come back in, the railroad could come back in the future if it was needed. It might be a different style of railroad bed, but if you had a factory complex going up in somewhere in the middle between Havana and Danville, it might be an occasion where you would have a return to rail in a connection to Norfolk Southern or Canadian National. There are existing main lines. So that corridor has specifications that are set at the national level, and they don't have a lot of diversity. They're very wide. They're capped so that there's no creosote that gets into your people, probably about 8 inches of gravel. And ADA, the American Disabilities Act, is rather in favor of, because if they're wide, you can put two wheelchairs together and they can have competition. So there are other uses, but indeed, the right-of-way prairie that was there, we have lost, and I don't want to see that happen again. So I made a comment about the 10 miles between Ogden and Oakwood, which is narrow. It's not a typical ideal prairie preservation of 10,000 acres in an amorphous block. It's linear. It's subject to herbicide drift or to weeds, and so it's not exactly an ideal prairie. It just happens that the soil is so rich that there is no prairie left, and so this is the example that we have. Well, I got a comment that, well, it's been disturbed by railroad. Very true. We always get that question. And there's a feeling that the French should fund trees, because when the rail trail is put in, the trees are eliminated. It's nice to have a tree for shade, nice to have a tree to perhaps be behind, or just augment the trail with some interesting view, a created view. I would prefer to have the natural view, and it is prairie, and it does look like weeds, for anyone that doesn't know better. And it's what six generations of settlers have been removing in order to do agriculture. So it's not a very favorable ecosystem. It just happens to be the heritage ecosystem. Champaign County was 94% prairie. So I'm watching the Friends and what they desire to do, and I think also I like to see some recognition of the fact that Heartland Pathways took out the interim trail use agreement with the federal board. And that vote and the work we did for 10 years beforehand to know that that corridor was a potential if it ever closed out. And it did close out. And CCDC, the Champaign County Design and Conservation Organization, which I respect entirely, wanted to no organized agency in the region wanted to take over the risk of having to buy the bed, which wasn't that expensive, but it had to be bought. If a railroad wants to come back in, it has to buy it back. So we went ahead by default, and initiated what has become a Kickapoo Trail. CCDC, after the fact, decided, and a number of other organizations decided, that this was a very good idea, and they wanted to assume the responsibility of acquiring the money for buying the line. It didn't happen, and as a result, the bed sat for many years. We had the difficulty of CCDC actually wanting to take over. So as I was working with the CCDC attorneys, we put them on the federal docket as associates, and eventually CCDC decided that we were persona non grata and that they were going to take over. Well, this is the sort of thing you face sometimes. So if that's the way you want to do it, as long as it gets done. But it didn't get done. It sat there for 20 years. And I strongly suspect that the state got involved with George Belovic and Bicycle Way people, and it was reactivated after that. But it used the docket that we worked with the Department of Surface Transportation Board in Washington, which was in control. It is sometimes touted that the CCDC was the initiator, but it wasn't so. I got in contact with the Surface Transportation Board, and they looked back in their records, and indeed the modern recreation of the attempt to do a Kickapoo Trail was using our docket in the first place. Sometimes, you know, you get a kickback for doing that sort of thing, but sometimes you organize the friends to go ahead with their own agenda. Sometimes that helps community nonprofits to have a little bit of funding and respect to be able to do what it does to inspire some of these sorts of things. So as you're listening to us talk about not-for-profit, you need to know that that sort of recognition is helpful and important. I haven't been tempted to make that obvious, but in many situations where one agency is helped by another, then when the agency gets funding, they do some kickback. Interestingly, that will go ahead, and some of us may have some thoughts there. So if you're looking at us as a nonprofit, you have to know that most of what we do is inspirational. We may own some things, but it's mainly with an attempt to preserve prairie, to create the opportunity for a cooperative trail, and to, in some cases, allow re-railing. But the prime move is to preserve prairie. If you're going to do that, you need to have some leaders who are going to speak or advocate. So we are advocates, but we're a small body, and it's very difficult to do this sort of thing. Allerton Park had a bunch of people, Hannon and Paxton and others, a small group, and they eventually blocked a dam that would have inundated Friends Creek and Alton Park, or a lot of Alton Park. And so you can work at this. You can have one person like George Fell creating a nature conservancy that's now worldwide. So don't give up on the idea of doing things if you're a small group, but it helps to have a team. You don't have to be out there politicking, but it helps. And it helps if you're politicking locally or at the state and national level. Funding will help. You have to have friends and relatives. So that the relationship of the Kickapoo Trail to the hikers and bikers that are working the canyon have objectives. And I would like to see those objectives include preservation. The Forest Preserve was encouraged by George Fell, the Nature Conserve leader. And politicians put a lot of emphasis on recreation. George Fell also had some involvement with conservation areas. And so the Champagne Forest Preserve has more right to do recreation, whereas the Vermilion County Conservation District has a right to do preservation. The Forest Preserve could do preservation if it wants and if it's approved, but in the long run, recreation will dominate preservation. So if you have an endangered species or a unique site, then you might have to raise an interest in the community. So that's the next step there. Well, let's transfer to another Zoom meeting, which is the meeting of the Illinois Nature Preserves Commission. I've already mentioned that the Department of Natural Resources includes nature and mining and other resources. And in some cases, there's a conflict between the two. So you have to walk a very fine line to preserve natural areas. And at the local level, especially rail trails that join communities and provide for exercise and ambiance are going to trump preservation. Okay, now I'm going to go to the Nature Preserves Commission and a meeting where the first dedication was the dedication of the Grand Prairie Friends natural area, two plots in the Coles County area near to Eastern Illinois University. And it's interesting to note that there's a regional director who presents a case for this dedication. It comes in two sections. First of all, it's usually get a preliminary dedication in case there are things here and there that might be discussed, whether it's a parking lot or a house that remains or a bridge or connection to other natural resources, there are questions. So usually several months later, the area is dedicated as a final dedication. The regional person who is doing the direction doesn't come with all the details that go with adjudicating this dedication. They come with sufficient details, pictorials and maps and charts that indicate the value of the site, the value of endangered species, the accessibility to other plots of land that have been bought by the drainage basin to the Clinton and the Charleston Lake, state-owned land, and land bought by grants and donations. So Grand Prairie Friends have been doing very well. They get accolades for this preservation and presentation. People need to know the area, the terrain, the relationship to the Ombar River, and to moraines if in the prisons, the relation to endangered species like the Indiana bat that they've encouraged, and people from the board, 9-member board, spoke up and said that they really applauded this. They went to school in Easton and used to use this area informally as part of their education and their recreation. So Grand Prairie Friends now owns about 1,000 acres of this sort of territory. It's more in line with forests, but Grand Prairie Friends also does prairie work, and they were initially put together to be advocates for prairie, and prairie includes prairie forest, and the areas around the drainage basins usually have big groves, and this is an extension of that concept. So there were two plots presented, and some of the members of the Grand Prairie Friends were able to make a comment and approved with more or less accolades. The a number of other sites were considered. I think there was probably about 16 sites in all. Zoom is very helpful, but in the middle it took a little engineering getting together. So if you're a nonprofit organization, don't be afraid of trying, and because we all have a learning process, and you might not just make it, but I think that was a relaxed situation, but it was solved fairly quickly. And we get involved in the same sort of problem. Doesn't always work. So one of the questions that was raised by one group was that there's a land trust in the southern part of the state, probably near to Grafton, near to the where the Illinois River runs into the Mississippi. A road had been put in and asphalted. Well, there was some question about asphalting a road before getting permission from the Nature Preserves Commission. The Nature Preserves Commission doesn't have a lot of teeth, but it is set up so that it will have some sort of control over natural areas in Illinois, and it makes it a little bit more formal. The sites will have a sign that says it's Illinois Nature Preserves Commission, and this was something that was a natural area that was listed, but it hadn't sought the permission of the organization, the Nature Preserves Commission, to do it in the first place. And the debate was about cast topography is where you often have limestone which leaches and creates caves underneath, and sometimes it falls in. So if you put a dirt road, you can probably recreate it easier than if you put in an asphalt road. So back and forth, and a little rap on the knuckles for having done it before, having asked questions about the ability to do it. So there was comments from various people to say Randy Hydorn and Fred Hardy. These are people who know the natural areas, and this was felt that they didn't want to set a precedence for people doing something before they had permission to do it. And I think from the background, it was pointed out that this had happened many times before. And so, yes, I think you just have to forgive, but go ahead and okay this particular move. Interesting again was that the final public participation, someone from a land group that is in the Rockford area working with an airport that wants to put a runway through a rather unique sort of gravelly sandy prairie, and it's the only real one in the state. And years and years ago, probably even 50 years ago, George Phil and his wife opposed this natural area being destroyed by runways. It was 25 acres, and then it gradually got down to 14 acres. And now the Rockford area has become a center for distribution of packages, and it has a lot of, it's a secondary airport to O'Hare and Midway. So they would like to have a runway go through, and for some people, it's easy enough to pick up the plants and put them elsewhere, which really violates any dignity of ecology that you can imagine. And this is ecology that's been here for eons, and you don't just do that. Hundreds and hundreds of people got hold of the land group, and they took out a court injunction, and it has prevented the airport from moving ahead for a period. But in there, the airport has said that you, the land agency, don't have legal status. So that's a matter of debate. So the question that was posed for the Committee on Natural Areas was, can you help us get some laws into action at the state level to give us the power to oppose a destruction of an ecological site. In the background, you have to know that Fran Hardy and others have gotten putting together a Prairie State Conservation Coalition. And it does some of this sort of thing. It asks questions, it lobbies, and actually is likely to be involved in this situation to straighten up the laws that help advocates for natural areas to do a better job. So you have to applaud those sort of groups that are on the periphery to the Department of Natural Resources. A fairly brief comment, but I think it will go further. You have to know that the board is about 9 people, chaired by George Covington, who is a specialist in the tax base of natural areas. But then the people who are on the board who are specialists, they often have been employees of the Department of Natural Resources, or they maybe have a forest preserve interest, or have some specialty. They might be writers or authors that write about natural areas. So the board is a range of people, some older, some younger, some male, some female, and it gives a chance for different points of view. So that's the Department of Natural Resources Nature Preserves Commission. Now we have this week another Zoom meeting with Ameren, because we have 1.5 miles of power tower poles to be replaced. The area involved involves an easement on our railroad right-of-way. So Ameren is the power company involved, is aware that we have that sort of a prairie interest on the plants that are unique underneath. One indicator species, especially, is New Jersey tea. It happens to be the only shrub on the prairie. It was it's a very substantial shrub, but it doesn't grow very high. It doesn't grow higher than the prairie itself, but it's an indicator species. It indicates that some of the area has never been plowed. This is often called red root because it has a red root, and all early plowing people would break a plow on this plant because it was very strongly rooted. So we have some discussion about that. What sort of pole would you have? Would you have a power pole with a pedestal? No, this line is not as powerful as the ones that you're talking about, as an example, which is on Route 45 south of Savoy, where we watched towers going up and very deep pedestals, and we thought that might be what was going to happen. But no, there's precedence for a single tower using a 70 or 80 foot wooden pole. That has to be a tree of some note. It's expensive. the metal towers on the top of a pedestal are also expensive, but these are probably cheaper than pedestal towers. And what they're going to do is move the tower a little closer to the edge of the easement, so they're not near the railroad corridor. The transect crosswise is Route 10, then a railroad, then an interurban. And they all add up, the roadside, the railroad right away, and the interurban all add up to a space enough for Prairie to express itself. And Ameren has been very kind to accept our questions about what should happen and how the area should be mown so that they can get in and see. There's questions. Our board was there and they were asking questions. For instance, how high do you mow? Well, we've got it to be 6 inches, which is a little higher than usual, but it's very easy for mowers to on an awkward terrain, to disturb the soil. And when you disturb the soil, you get weeds. So I think that's a positive. The power company, once it has their towers in, will have lines people who will pull the line to a electrical power station at the Piatt Champaign County line. That will take a while to do. And then there's a question of seeding. Well, it has been tradition to use Pheasants Forever planting, which has tended to be rich in grasses because they're encouraging pheasants. It has a different purpose. But I think in the years more recent, the Pheasants Forever prairies have gotten to be more biodiverse. But we would prefer to go to a seed company that's providing Illinois gene pool seed and a range that wouldn't include a lot of aggressive grasses. And Ameren has agreed to that. We could also have pollinators, but pollinator people like to add plants like white and sweet clover that are generous in terms of pollination and encouraging bees. That are mostly introduced bees, Italian bees, but they're very generous in their pollinating capacity. Actually, we would prefer to encourage bumblebees, so we don't encourage the Italian bees, but we also don't encourage the sweet clover, whether it be yellow or white. It costs us a fortune to remove it. It's a legume, so it's regarded as a living fertilizer. It will convert inert nitrogen to proteinaceous material, which when it dies will go towards creating humus. So it's very good for farmers and that want an early hay crop and also encourage some organic matter in their crop rotation. There is a local power line on the interurban, which is close by, and we that will be lifted up and put on the main power line now. which means that the poles will have to be salvaged. And so there's a debate about where you mow. Can you sit on the ballast with a high-powered mower on the end of a high hoe, so it can stretch out and work with unusual habitats? Or do you do your mowing with a smaller unit like a bobcat? And so they would like to do this quickly before the ground was solid, while the ground is solid. So it's frozen at the present time. So the, was by agreement with us all, the mowing is starting today. And today is, I'm recording on, well, it started yesterday, I think, and also today. So that was pleasing. And that again is, has multiplier effect on other parts of our railroad bed in the Monticello area, where we have the same towers, which are heavily, they're of steel, and the steel is rotting, and there are also a need for reform, probably upgrading of the capacity of the lines being put in. And so we would like to think that we can work with that precedence, and actually we would hope it would continue to other areas. We would also discuss herbicide. We would like to be free of herbicide, and we'd like that idea to continue to other natural areas. The natural areas, 100 feet wide, it's 12 acres. Take out the ballast and you have perhaps 8 acres. And every time a power line easement is put in on railroad bed, because it's easier to do that than to go through farmland, then we're losing habitat. And that's happening regionally, but also around the world. And we would like to think that what we're doing is encouraging people to think about how much they use herbicide as distinct from chainsaws and axes. And then we have to figure out what our role is. If we're going to seed in the fall, then you don't plow it up, for which encourages weeds, but which is traditional to do if you're a landscaper. You just tickle the surface with hand rakes, and then firm the soil after you've sown the seed, so that it's prairie plants need know how to do that, and weeds don't do so well. But weeds will come. And in the spring, you need to mow the weeds before they seed and create another weed seed gene pool. So I think we're getting close to the end. So that's what we're doing for the week, and what you might be doing if you get involved in a natural area as we have been. So this is Dave Monk of Prairie Monk, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on your FM dial.
Research shows that mentors play a powerful role in providing young people with the tools to strive and thrive, to attend and engage in school, and to reduce risky behavior. Make a difference in your community by becoming a CU One-to-One mentor. Visit www.cuoneto1.org or call the Champaign or Urbana School District for more information.
Hi, this is Rob Dollhouse with See You at Home. I want to personally invite you to participate in our annual community awareness event, One Winter Night. This event is a powerful opportunity to learn about homelessness and to raise awareness and support for our friends without an address. We encourage everyone in our community to participate and really experience what it might be like to spend the night outside, especially in the coldest part of a central Illinois winter. The event is Friday, February 4th, starting at 6 p.m. To learn more about this event or to sign up to participate, check out our website, seeyouathome.us/one-winter-night.
It's WEFT.